Europe's elite club competition.
The Champions League is back on 5 Live and the Football Daily Podcast. After incredible drama in the group stages, the biggest and most prestigious club competition in European football returns on February the 14th across BBC Radio 5 Live.
We'll be joined by legends of the game to bring you the latest.
And on the Football Daily Podcast, all the reaction, all the analysis, and all the goals. You won't miss a thing across BBC Radio 5 Live and the Football Daily Podcast.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
5 Live's Rugby Union Daily.
Welcome to another very special Rugby Union Daily. Matt Dawson here, reminiscing a little bit and turning back the clock with a good friend of mine, Sean Edwards, who of course is right in the thick of it. He's in the present day of rugby, whereas I'm a little bit behind the curve, Sean. Yeah, it's a long time since I played with you. Do you remember the first time that we met?
Well, I remember coaching against you, which wasn't easy.
Was that your first recollection of me, is it?
Well, obviously, you played for England and played for Northampton first. I heard we had a chance of getting you, and I was like, what? Why are you even asking me that question? Do we want Matt Dawson? Of course we want him. And then, obviously, you know, you came down to London, you know, you came out of your, I wouldn't say comfort zone, but, you know, it's normal. Like, you know, when I left Wigan, if you come to London, it can be a little bit different.
It's daunting, yeah.
You know, you had the guts to go into an environment which, you know, it was a little bit uncomfortable for you at first, but I always think that before something good happens, it has to be a little bit uncomfortable at first, you know?
It's really interesting you say that, Sean, because my sort of recollection of the first time that we sort of encountered each other at Wasps, obviously, yeah, I knew that you were coaching against me when you were at Wasps and I was at Northampton, but that it was a bit prickly. You know, I didn't understand what you and Warren Gatlin were up to, but, you know, I look back on that and realise that that was quite an important part of my, not only rugby education, but life education, that you just sort of, you put me in that discomfort that you talked about to sort of, not, I suppose, test me out a little bit in a new environment and to see if I was going to be ready to dig in. That's how it felt to me.
And you proved yourself right in the fact that you did dig in. You did understand what we wanted from you. And if I'm right to remember, at the end of the season, you had something called champion at the side of your name, English champion. So it worked okay, didn't it?
Yeah. No, they were brilliant. I mean, I still can't really believe it was, that's nearly 20 years ago.
Gats thought a lot about you as well. Like, he knew that in the big games, you'd be there for us, mate, and he was magnificent in the big games. People forget. People say he's the best, one of the best jackals you've ever come across. You know, obviously, they talk about Sam Warburton and all that. I said, Matt Dawson was one of the best jacklers I've ever coached. And, what, is a scrum half? I'm like, yeah. And he used to do judo. I said he was good at judo, so he was a very, very good at jackling. Brilliant jackler.
God, my mum is going to be so pleased when she hears that, because she made me do judo when I was a little, and that's amazing that you even remembered that.
Quite a lot for French lads. Some French lads do it because judo is very popular over here. Jiu-jitsu a bit, but judo is very, very popular over here. My daughter does it just around the corner, and we'll get her to do it. She's only 8, but and she got a belt the other day. Honestly, she came out and she went, do you notice anything different? I'm like, yeah, you've got a different coloured belt.
I love that, because you were always into doing things differently, right? And I know everybody, you know, lots of coaches now and players now, they're looking for the edge. They're looking for ways to, you know, strengthen their minds, their bodies, their nutrition, whatever it may be. But you know, that was always one thing that really stuck out about me, you, Sean, is that, you know, you would be in the gym doing a load of boxing and getting the boys to do something a little bit different, the wrestling, the boxing. We'd have Bobby you know, getting us to do all the wrestling and those bits. But now it's a given, isn't it? The rugby players are, everybody's doing anything they can possibly do to get an edge.
We, I definitely think in the WASH setup, we had an edge in strength and conditioning at that time. And that lot was down to us. Paul Stridgen, obviously, Craig White, and all the staff that we had there. And I think definitely that was one of the reasons when it came to the end of the season, generally we was playing our best rugby. Because the way that they structured the season, structured the, you know, went to train hard, went to back off, it wasn't an accident that we were peaking at the end of the season virtually every year.
Would you ever have imagined back then in your black shiny tracksuit with a dragon on the back or whatever it was? Where I can't remember that jacket you had. I bet you've still got that bomber jacket, haven't you?
Oh, Steve Collins jacket.
The Steve Collins one, yeah. When you're cruising...
What a fighter he was.
Oh, yeah. When you're cruising around with your Steve Collins jacket on, you know, 20 years ago this is, Giz, would you have imagined that you'd be living in the south of France somewhere, coaching the French national side? Did you think that was ever on the cards?
Well, obviously Paul came over to work at Toulon. Bobby came over to work at Toulon, and I obviously came over visiting him with families and etc. And I got to say, I looked at the sea sometimes and the weather etc. And I thought, might fancy a bit of this down the line. Obviously, you know me, I've always been pretty ambitious, and someone asked me the other day, you know, why did you choose France? And I said, well, I thought I could help. I thought I could help France. I looked at the defensive system, and obviously, and I looked at how they'd done in the Junior World Cups. That's one of the reasons I decided to come here. Most of my offers were around about the same, but I kind of sense that the French people, I wanted to make them proud of their team again.
I think the rugby public knows that you've always excelled in the game, you know, rugby league, rugby union, coaching, whatever it may be. Do you feel that there was like a sleeping giant there in French rugby that was just a little bit different than anything else?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. And you've got to remember, I agreed to go to Wigan at first, and that fell through because I wasn't allowed to take any staff there with me. That was around about Christmas time of 2018, short going into 19. Thankfully, we won it with Grand Slam that year with Wales. And then I got a few offers from, obviously, from different things because at first, Wales, I didn't have any offer for Wales. But then I ended up getting offers from, well, interest from, I think it was four or five international teams. And I decided to go to France.
I guess having Rafa Ibanez involved was probably a draw as well, wasn't it?
Huge, absolutely, totally, yeah. It's great to have a friendly face. You know, you go to a different place and you have a friendly face, someone who you know. And I obviously knew of Fabien Galthié. You know, I'd briefly met him a couple of times. And I remember he played against WASH. It was actually when WASH just started to get becoming a really good team. And we had a very good win in Paris, and the rush defence was on fire that day. But we got a couple of interceptions as well. And what I noticed afterwards that Fabien's teams that he coached, they all did a similar style defence because I think he played against it and realised, oh, this is a bit different. You know, it's quite suffocated, and for the attack. So I'd noticed that he'd. Everywhere he went, he introduced that a rush style defence, and so obviously, when the opportunities came, I knew he believed in the style of defence that I wanted to implement, and you know, the last and so far it's been going okay.
Were you ever worried about the sort of politics around French rugby? Obviously, it you know gone through some tough times. Had been through some tough times. It's great where it is now, but. You know, there are a lot of people coming and going, players and coaches, weren't
there? I'll tell you something. There's good and bad about not being able to understand what people are saying. Some's good and some's bad. Just remember that. I'll answer that in that way. Ignorance is bliss, mate. Ignorance is bliss. I just concentrate on one thing. My job. That's it. I'm not here to wax lyrically about, you know, different things. I'm here to win games of rugby. Simple.
Give me your favourite French sentence. Your French motivational sentence. Like a one-liner in the changing room at half-time. It could be about anything, but go on, give me it in French.
Plus vitesse de ligne, en ce moment, parce que nous n'avons pas la vitesse.
Vitesse, that means speed. Sorry to do with speed.
That says we need more line speed, because at the moment, we have no speed.
That was good. That was good, mate. I like it. Do you speak French, like, most of the day?
When I came, and obviously, you know, my message is 4 or 5 words maximum. And then people say, I could see people were thinking, oh, he's only doing that because it's French and he doesn't really, you know, grasp the language. I said, hey, mate, that's more than what I write in English. And they used to be now, you know, the players like it because, you know, it's obvious, isn't it? What's more to say about defence, you know what I mean?
I want to know if you've picked up L'Équipe paper and have, like, shown it to the team as if to say, in French, this is what they're saying. But, you know, that whole... You did that so brilliant at Wasps. I remember it so many times where you've, you know, you're pointing at pictures and quotes of people, of what they're saying in the paper, you know, to stir it up. Have you done that version in French with L'Équipe or something like that?
No, not so much, but I've done it looking at the English-speaking website. So, you know, I'm always looking for an edge, mate, you know. I want to ask them a question before we play at Twickenham. Who's won at Twickenham here? Not one of them's won at Twickenham.
Is that right?
Big challenge.
Not one?
Except Barbarians, but, you know, that wasn't the proper England team, was it, obviously? You think how many players in the French team has actually won the test match at Twickenham?
Yeah.
When did France last win at Twickenham? I can't remember. Was it 2010?
You're going to be a bit feisty for that game. I can tell, mate. I like it. Listen, when the Wigan bit, were you living near Sam Tompkins?
Yeah, not far. No, he lives about 2 or 3 kilometres from me.
Have you been down to Catalan and...
Yeah, I've been watching them train sometimes. I've been watching them train. I haven't been this season, but last season I've been watching them train. Steve McNamara just lives around the corner from me. He lives right on the beach here. I'm about 200 metres from the beach. Maka lives there. And, a few of the staff used to live around in this area. So it was good for my, you know, for my family when I wasn't here away with the French team. So, but everyone's kind of mucked in well, and the French people have been absolutely marvellous to us. The bienvenue, très bon.
And another rugby league great getting stuck into the Six Nations with Kevin Sinfield.
Yeah, obviously an outstanding rugby league player, and for me, the work he's done for his mate Rob Burrows, he deserves an art of for me.
Yeah.
I know one thing. If I had to vote, I'd vote for him to get an Arthur. You know, the work he's done for Rob, and just a great round all lad. He when he first came to Union, he kind of contacted me. I actually didn't really know Kevin that well because I'd retired before he'd, you know, started playing. And we had 3 or 4 conversations over Skype about this, and sharing information. He helped me a little bit, and you know, I just thought it was explaining to him that about rugby union, it's always a contest for the ball, and you can lose the ball at any time, etc. And I think there's definitely a mutual respect between us, and I think England, you know, obviously Steve Borthwick getting the head job at England, it was obvious to me that Kevin Sinfield would be going with him.
What do you reckon it is, though, Sean? What are you go back years, go back to you know, England of 20 odd years ago. It was the rugby league coach and Phil Larder coming in, you know, and there has been continuous success around, not just defensively, but generally coaches coming from rugby league into rugby union. What, can you put your finger on it? Now, you know, you've been at the top of it for so long. What is it? Why does it bring something different that a rugby union coach can't bring?
I think it's just the emphasis on defence, that's all. Just the emphasis on defence. You know, we've always kind of been brought up, you have to practice your defence, you know, at least 25-30% of your training sessions. And we've got to remember as well, in rugby league, you don't have to win the ball. You know, so we set piece, you don't have to spend any time on your set piece. You know, you don't have a tight five, really, you know. So in the union, you have to spend a lot of time because if you don't win the ball, this is something what Lawrence taught me when I first came to rugby union. He said, you literally never have the ball if your line-out's not working, if your restarts are not working, if the scrum's not working, you literally will never ever see the ball. And I remembered that from when I played actually against Wales for England Schoolboys. I remember we was under pressure at the scrum and we didn't see the ball for 15, 20 minutes on one part of the game. We were very lucky but we won the game in the end with a breakaway try. But I always remember not hardly having the ball for about 15, 20 minutes, and that was because of the power of the Welsh forwards that day.
So that conversation around the coaching bit and rugby league, and it makes perfect sense what you talked through there, Giz, doesn't it? About, you know, you don't have the set piece, you don't necessarily have to worry about winning the ball. It's very much focused on the technique of tackling and making sure that it's repeatable.
I think rugby league teams now, they do a lot of more work wrestling on the floor, because compared to when I played, the players are absolutely amazing wrestlers now. You know, try to slow the play the ball down at the ruck, etc. A little bit like we do in union, you know, jackling, apprentice rucking, etc. But the one thing you can't do in rugby league is steal the ball off someone unless it's a one-on-one tackle,
yeah,
which obviously is incredibly difficult to do, you know, just one-on-one. So maybe that's one of the reasons that they have more time to practice defence in the past.
And you know, being a bit more specific about what's going on in your relationship with the French team, I'm sort of trying to take myself back to pre Gaultier, Ibanez, Edwards era. You know, there have been some significant changes with this French side, not only sort of tactically, technically as well. Is that something you were very conscious of, you know, about having the motivation to not only play but to defend needed to change for the French team?
Well, obviously, I have a system that's worked before. You know, it won four Six Nations before I arrived here. Won two Anakin Cups, won four English Premiership. So if the system that you're teaching players, and this is the same for like when you arrived at Wasp, you bought into it because you knew, hold on, these guys just won the last two English Premierships. They just won a Heineken Cup in 2004. So it must work. And I think that definitely helps the fact that, you know, I'd been, you know, successful before I arrived here.
Okay. Point taken, but then I've also had a flashback to a warm-up game against Henley Hawks for Wasps.
Because you've got a good memory, mate, haven't you?
And I got absolutely taken apart by you during the game because I was doing this sweeping defence and you wanted me to get on the short side and then like track a bit infield, then get back to the short side. And I didn't understand what I was doing. And you were absolutely at me for the whole game. And I didn't understand what I was supposed to be doing.
Well, I'll tell you why. And I've had a similar thing with Antoine, right? Your main job in the game of rugby as a 9 and 10 is attack, right? So it helps if you have recuperate a lot of time when we defend it. I once played in a test match for Great Britain and I made 36 tackles. against Australians who were 4 and 5 stone heavier than me. Did it affect my attack? Yes, it did. And that's one of the reasons I devised a system where the 9 and 10 hopefully are not expending too much energy in defence, because your main job is attack.
But the cultural shift, you know, whether it's me playing for Worcester against Headley Hawks or it's Anton Dupont in the French national side, the mindset shift and the belief and understanding and trust that those players have that this is going to work, you know, it came across as quite immediate, Sean. It wasn't like all of a sudden you warmed into it for 4 or 5 games. You know, it was pretty quick.
They were already good players, mate. You know, they're already good players here. And I remember it was in the World Cup after we, fortunately, with Wales, beat France. They had a player sent off, obviously, in that game. And I remember speaking to Fabian, and I'd studied the fact that they were in the warm-up games. I thought, that formation looks a bit familiar. And anyway, I spoke to Fabian, and I said I congratulated him on the way his team had been defending in the World Cup, which was because he was the defence coach in 2019. And he said to me, well, we basically copied your system.
Is that right?
Which helped a lot, because when I arrived, everything wasn't new to them. But a lot of people have that system. You see it everywhere. People say to me, you know, what thing were you most proud of in what you achieved in, you know, in rugby union? And I wouldn't say, you know, winning Heineken Cup or Six Nations, etc. But them are fantastic, you know, and I really enjoyed. But it's the fact that when I look at the rugby teams, I see virtually every team with a 13-2 formation that's exactly the same as what I introduced in 2011, before the World Cup. And the reason we introduced it was because of Ronan O'Gara. And Ronan O'Gara was brilliant at hitting them corners, wasn't it?
Yeah.
One bounce and out. And they pressure Ireland. And so, you know, myself, I came up, I mentioned it to Gats. I said, I think we should play with 2 fullbacks, a left side fullback and a right side fullback. And Gats went, yeah, I think it's a good idea. Let's go with it. And, you know, he backed me and, you know, now you see a lot of teams play with that formation.
And you're going to look back at your legacy, you know, when you're...
Yeah, because, you know, remember about me, I'm a rugby nerd, aren't I? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a nerd, you know what I mean, of rugby. And to see that formation with, you know, even the All Blacks do it now, and, you know, a lot of teams do it, and Springboks and what have you, they have a similar formation. It's, yeah... It was mainly, I invented that.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, it must be great to look at any game of rugby and see it.
I was with Gats a few months ago when he was in New Zealand. He said something similar. He said, "Yeah, I was part of that change of formations of the well." Gats was one of the first people for the rush defence, wasn't he? You know.
Yeah.
I remember when he started talking to me about it, but I said, I've been thinking that for 4 months, but I had no confidence in myself because I was a new coach, you know, brand new sport, you know. Anyway, it's been working okay since.
Do you think there's any scope for that left in the game? Do you think that where the game is going, that there will be those significant shifts in tactics, or do you think it sort of found itself?
Yeah, I mean, so many tries from Malls now and pick and go. That's one of the you know, teams try to get in the 22, trying to get a penalty, kick for the corner, and there's so many tries from Malls and pick and go. And some people think it's not that entertaining, seeing yet another try from pick and go. They try to change it a little bit by stopping the double latcher. For me, the only way to change it is to just ban latching. That's the only way to stop it.
Yeah.
To ban pre-latching before contact. And obviously after contact, it would be okay. But, you know, people say that, oh, you know, rugby is not as exciting as it was at times. But there's more points being scored than ever. Miles more points being scored than ever. But a lot of tries are from Malls and they're from pick and go.
Well, I mean, talk about excitement, Sean. You guys, I was at that Grand Slam game last year at Stade de France.
Atmosphere's
oh my goodness,
mental
me.
It.
Gee.
The fact we play at night time helps, you know. But they did it well, the FFR, didn't they?
That was it. It was the FFR had this. You know, it's a Grand Slam game, obviously. But this is where we want the World Cup to be, at this level, for every single game, particularly for the French game. Because it was, for me, it was a real throwback to the 90s, where you were playing at Parc des Princes, and it was, you know, you can imagine teams now going to Stade de France with that atmosphere and being, you know, behind the eight ball before they even kick off. You know, it's like Tiger Woods standing on the tee with an aura around him. It was that intimidating.
It was similar for the All Black game, and fortunately, you know, we got quite an historic win against the All Blacks. And after the match, you know, they had the, you know, the fireworks and everything. Like, it's yeah, it was, they did it very, very well. There was a few dodgy moments, so, you know, playing against England, we held them up twice over the try line, but yeah, we ended up getting the job done. And it was after, what was it, 12 years. Of not winning a trophy, it was very rewarding for me in particular.
Is that something that you have to be a little bit, I don't know, guarded against, the fact that, you know, they've got to earn the right to get the crowd to that level? Do you know what I mean? Or is it just now you think, you know, for the next 8 months getting into the World Cup, the crowd are going to be there and that's going to be our 16th man? Or is it something where you...
You know me, I don't think like that, me, Dosh. I just think, what can I control? And that's not really my job. So, and then we've obviously got a huge game against Ireland. It's great now that... It's great that the Six Nations is broke up into three different segments, because, as you know, being an international rugby player, couldn't play five test matches on the bench, you know, five consecutive weeks. And it gives the players a break, and it also gives the coaches a break. And, you know, we were allowed to come home in the last Six Nations during those breaks and recuperate ourselves. And because, as you know, being together for 8 weeks non-stop is very, very taxing without a break. And Fabio was very good last year. The way he broke it up for us, and we were allowed to go home in the down weeks. Players did a bit of training, obviously, and we were fresh at the end of it.
There's big expectations, though, this year, though, for France. I mean, you can't deny that.
No, yeah, well, that's good to have expectations. That usually means they do it all right, doesn't it? I think, you know, the fact we've got two huge away games, England and Ireland, and as I said, you know, it's a long time, I think, since France won in Twickenham. Obviously, we won there in Ireland 2 years ago. But Ireland, obviously, killing at the moment. You know, they're flying. And it's a huge challenge for us.
But the prize is so big, Sean, isn't it? A home World Cup, favourites on flying form. It's so big. I mean, you and the coaching team have got a real responsibility there, haven't you, to manage that.
I read a comment by Greg Aldrich the other day, and he said he doesn't want the Six Nations to be a preparation for the World Cup. Six Nations is the most famous, the most historic competition in the world, and we aim to give it the respect it deserves, and that's by going out, giving it absolutely everything to try to retain our title. It's the most historic competition in the world. And if I'm honest, it annoys me a little bit when people are talking about something what's 8 months in front, when there's something 2.5 weeks in front. I just think it's a marvellous competition. Even when, you know, I was playing rugby league, I would always watch the Six Nations.
Yeah, and having 30 or 40 years of rugby experience, it's a bit easier to have that perspective, isn't it? You know, being if we put both of ourselves back to when we were players, you know, there's a lot rattling around in your minds, and lots of distractions, and you know, it can be really difficult to narrow. It can be so tough to do that.
That's one of the best advice I've ever had as a coach is remember what it felt like as a player. And the best thing for you as a player is to have two or three jobs, concentrate on them, and the rest will look after itself.
And I suppose, yeah, the messaging that always used to get through to us pre-World Cups as well were, listen, you go into the World Cup as Grand Slam champions, that's the position you want to be in.
Yeah, I remember you guys winning in Dublin and then going to Australia, beating All Blacks and beating Australia. And that was sending a message, hey, you know, we mean business. We're a serious team.
Yeah. And, you know, just to sort of wrap it all up before I let you go, I would like you to reflect on your coaching career as to date, because there are, you know, as you just explained, there are huge Six Nations coming up. There's whatever's coming up in September, October. To date, what trophy means the most to you?
Well, Six Nations is huge because it's the whole nation behind you, isn't it? You know, but I'd say the hardest trophy I was involved in to win is the Heineken Cup. It's very, very difficult to win. You know, first of all, you got to qualify. And that wasn't easy. I'm not sure what the rules are now, because I'm not involved in club rugby as much. But, you know, to get in the top six, you had to get in the top six, didn't you? You know, to qualify.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to win it two times. Once as head coach, once as assistant coach to Warren, working with Geach, as well as director of rugby in 2007. And not as a, like, being making really famous or anything like that, because the Six Nations makes you famous, doesn't it? That's when the whole country's behind you. I'm talking about just a pure achievement of coaching, of planning, of getting the right players in at the right time, etc. Would have been that. I mean, winning the English Premiership's obviously marvellous, but I think winning out of the Cup's very, very difficult. I mean, how many times has, you know, I think since Rob Baxter, I think I am the next head coach who's coached an English team, an English person, coached an English team to win the Heineken Cup.
Yeah.
I think I'm the next person. I think Stuart Lancaster obviously coached Leinster. I think they won it once. But yeah, obviously that was an Irish team. But yeah, I think that was on a pure rugby coaching emphasis, that was very difficult.
I think you'd certainly be you're going to be up there, and I know there's plenty left, mate. Don't worry, I'm not.
I'll tell you something else too. Only conceded two tries in the Six Nations, which will last for 100 years, the way the game is at the moment, and not conceding a try for the equivalent of 5 games in 2013, when I hadn't been picked for the Lions. That was very, very nice from a pure coaching perspective, you know.
Well, funny you should mention that. I'm glad that you did mention some of your Six Nations statistics, because Sam Warburton and Danny Kerr did a podcast. I don't know whether you heard it. And they were ranking the greatest Six Nations coaches of all time. And do you know where they put you?
Well,
number one.
I've got a lot more to do. I'll tell you what,
that's not bad, though, is it? That's not bad.
My teams have never been out the first two for 5 years. No, it's a big challenge this year because of Ireland away and England away and all that. I'm totally aware of all that. Guess how much prize money? It was second, first. 5 years. How much prize money do you think? €25 million. Tell them CEOs. Have I ever come up for a job? The money's coming in where Edwards is.
I like that. Hey, listen, I feel like I've just had a little moment in your interview for France, and you just pulled up all the stats right there. I like it.
I only read it the other day. I only read it a few days ago. Because people don't know, because the prize money for Six Nations is really good. And the way I know, remember, is years ago, when I was in Wales, Italy scored a try the very last second against us, right? And the CEO came in and said, do you know how much that just cost us? £450,000, right? And obviously, he was looking at me, you know, because I'm the defence coach. So I've always looked of what, like, how much you win. If you get a Grand Slam, you win £6 million. Serious money.
Wow.
£5 million for a thing, yeah? Second is 3.25, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, going down to fifth to sixth or whatever. So I also remember the guy from Wales came in and he said, he just cost us £450,000 that last try. And I felt that pain in my heart. So yeah, €25 million the last 5 years. First twice and second three times.
The €25 million man. That's what it is.
Not just me, was it? I think rest of the team sort of contributed quite a lot. I think Antoine Dupont may have contributed a little bit.
I'm hoping that you are stocked up with some Dom Perignon, ready to dish out to your defenders of the week or whatever it is in this Six Nations. Have you got plenty on tap ready to go?
Cost me a fortune recently because we keep winning. Cost me an absolute fortune. I said to one of the lads, I've had to sell my car for keep buying all this champagne. And the price of champagne's gone up. It's cost about €200 now for a bottle of Dom Perignon. I'm absolutely skinned.
Do not give me that, any of that, what you're talking about. Hey, listen, Sean, you've given me plenty of time. You've given us all some fantastic insight into not only what France are up to, but you. And it's just always such a pleasure to get the insight that you give to us all around the game, mate. So, as ever, thanks for your time. Have a brilliant, brilliant Six Nations and World Cup. Again, I'll reiterate what France are going to do as a country, as an FFR, as players, as coaches for this World Cup. I don't know about you, mate, but I am absolutely buzzing for September, October coming.
And don't forget, if you ever fancy a little break over here, get yourself on a plane to Perpignan and you've got your own room upstairs, mate.
With my own fridge of Dom Perignon. Thank you very much. We'll leave it there.
See you, pal.
Cheers, Sean. Take care, buddy.
Five Lives Rugby Union
Daily. I just didn't want to let my family down, so that's why I sort of like push myself every single day.
Jermaine Defoe, Outside the Box, from BBC Radio 5 Live.
Join me for my brand new Fly on the Wall podcast in my quest to become a football manager.
Just being able to look yourself in the mirror every day and just be like, you know what? I did everything right. I didn't cut any corners.
From my roots in East London to 57 England caps, winning the Scottish Premier League and everything in between.
The gift and the talent, that takes care of itself, but the hard work and the sort of like application, this needs to be day in and day out.
Jermaine Defoe, Outside the Box. Listen on BBC Sounds.